Welcome to EB5 Investment Voice, where attorney insights intersects with immigration investments. If you are a foreign investor, domestic fund manager, or enterprising entrepreneur and want to get the most out of the EB5 program, you have come to the right place. I'm Mark Deal, and I'll be your co-host on this journey. I'm joined by your host, Mona Shaw, and other attorneys at Mona Shaw & Associates, as well as immigration leaders from around the world. So let's get into EB5 Investment Voice. Mona, I realize today is a continuation of the theme that we've had for the last couple episodes regarding regional centers, whether it makes sense to set up your own regional center, to rent a regional center, do direct pooled. But I realize today is going to be a little different. We're going to be talking about, well, whether EB5 even works.
Yes, Mark. The issue is that there are many, many good projects out there, but a good project does not necessarily mean a good EB5 project. Nor is it necessarily something that is easily marketable. And what usually happens is that a developer will go to a immigration attorney or an EB5 attorney who really doesn't have that much experience in marketing and say, this is my project. And of course, people just want to be paid fees and stuff. So they would say, yes, you know, go ahead. We'll do the documents for you, etc. And then the next thing is that a developer has paid all this money. He's gone out and he's trying to get money, or has a regional center, and he or she has no idea on how to bring in investors or really handle this regional center. So what we wanted to do, and this is in no way being negative about EB5. You know how much I love EB5 for many reasons. But we really want to bring out some realistic pointers to people. So the listener has a realistic expectation of what to expect in EB5, how difficult EB5 is.
I could appreciate that. And I would think that the people listening could also appreciate it, because obviously somebody could come to you and say, hey, I want to set up a regional center. And sure, you could take their money and do all the steps necessary to create the regional center so it's all set up for immigration purposes. But do they really have the marketing backbone to bring in investors, or does it even, you know, work for that? So
exactly,
I appreciate that you're
yes.
jumping in and say, hey, look, EB5 is not right for everybody. So let's clear that up.
Well, there are two types of people that we are going to really have on the show. One is somebody who's a developer and has an amazing project, but did not want to put up his own regional center. So we wanted to explore just how he's basically his frustrations and his experiences in the EB5 market. Although it's still early days for him. And another is a new regional center, and a new regional center who were a little misled as to the ease of obtaining investors. So we were bringing out two different point of views. Again, I don't want anybody to be completely negative and put off EB5, but these are experiences, and there are ways of going around certain experiences as well.
Agreed. And to help us with that today, I know we have Morty Lipkus, who's an experienced developer, but new to EB5. Hi, Morty.
Hi. Good to be here.
Great to have you.
Thank you for being here, Morty, and discussing your experiences. Really, right at the outset, I'm going to ask you to introduce yourself as to, you know, your experiences in your field. You're a real estate developer, correct?
I'm an attorney by education, but I haven't practiced in 30 years. Luckily for me, I'm surrounded by good attorneys such as Mona Shaw and the people who work in her office. They're an excellent team. And I strongly recommend to anyone who's considering EB5 to stop here at this office and understand from Mona what it's all about.
I love that.
I appreciate that.
He's buttering you up, Mona.
I know. I appreciate that. Well, Morty, you're into real estate development in one of the real estate capitals of the world, New York City. You have an excellent project. I'm going to talk about your project in a moment, but how were you introduced to EB5?
I read about it. Reading the real estate industry papers in the city, it's hard not to be aware of EB5, but there's a great reluctance among local developers to use it because, for example, I advocated to my partners in this hotel project that Mona just referred to that we do EB5 a year ago. And the reaction was, oh, it's very complicated. It's a whole new world. We'd have to learn. Let's avoid it. that was a mistake. We should have started a year earlier.
Right.
We would have been completely funded by now.
Well, Marty, right. Let me ask you this. How were you initially introduced to EB-5?
I read about it. I did some research. I found that Mona was a prominent lawyer in the field. I reached out to her. We met, and she educated me. And then I met many other people. Unfortunately, it's an industry that, in some respects, is like the used car sales industry.
Yeah.
There are a lot of unsavory characters, and one has to be very careful who one associates with.
Right. Well, the first thing we did look at, Mark, was the fact that Morty has an excellent project which would appeal to people who want to do EB-5, because, of course, people who want to do EB-5 want to make sure that, A, they get their green card, but more importantly, they get their money back. And Morty, before we go on, because as we're going to be talking about it, what is your project about?
The project, there is a brand new neighborhood being developed in Manhattan called Hudson Yards.
Oh, people have heard about Hudson Yards, I can tell you that.
It's essentially a brand new city within Manhattan. 20 million square feet of new offices, 5,000 apartments, a new school, two big shopping centers totaling 1,250,000 square feet, a brand new subway. So it's essentially a new city within Manhattan. And some of the largest companies in New York are moving from Park Avenue and other more traditional office locations. They are moving to Hudson Yards.
Right. And your project is what?
To develop a 220-room Marriott Hotel, part of the Autograph family, which is an upscale brand. And we are located smack in the center of Hudson Yards.
Right. So after hearing about Related and all of the EB-5 raises, you were pushed in a way, but you were persuaded, how we can say that, you would go for EB-5.
So correct.
I want you to tell our listeners a few of your frustrations in EB-5 thus far. I know we've really started and you've been to China a few times and you've been talking to investors, but what do you think is the hardest part for you?
As I said, there are many unsavory characters in this industry. People who give you the impression that if you associate with them, the money will flow easily and quickly. No, EB-5 requires marketing of your project. I've been to China now twice to do that, and I just returned from 3 weeks in China, and I'm very glad I went, because no one can market your project like you.
That's
you
right.
Can think you're sending intermediaries who are well-intentioned, but nobody knows the project like you. And when the agents meet with you directly, I see it makes a big difference. And I now have maybe 100 agents on my WeChat, and I communicate with some of them on a daily basis, and that face-to-face contact and that developing the interpersonal relationships is essential to marketing the project.
So what you're saying basically is that people who go into EB-5 should understand it's a lot of hard work.
Correct.
Right.
Good results, but you have to work for it.
Well, that's with most things in life. But what has been frustrating for you?
Well, doing just one project as my first EB-5 project, it's been hard to get the attention of some of the larger immigration agents who want to work only on the very, very large projects, or who want to work only for the very big developers who have a constant flow of projects. So I find myself having to work more with smaller agents. Smaller agents means needing to work with more agents to achieve the number of investors that I need.
Right. And you've met with a number of direct investors who have come to see your project. And how have you found that? Have you found that they just easily fall in, or?
It's been difficult. And I can understand that, because you're asking people to invest in a foreign country with somebody they don't know.
Yeah.
It's a very frightening prospect. Luckily, today on the with the internet, everyone can go on the internet and discover that Morty Lipkus is a very boring person. He's never declared bankruptcy. He's never defaulted on anything. He's never been to jail. So luckily, on the internet should help a little bit.
Well, I find that when you do meet one-on-one and a person realizes that, you know, it's your project, you're the owner, you have a lot at stake, it does make a difference when you are talking on one-on-one investors.
I think it's also important to understand the investors are not fools. If someone has $500,000 to invest, they earned it, they're intelligent, and they know what they're doing. I think it's been very important when I've been able to tell investors how much of my own personal funds I have invested in my project, and that I will not see $1 of it back until all the EB-5 investors receive every penny back that they've invested.
I think that is very important. That's a good message, which doesn't come across often with an intermediary. But if somebody doesn't want to go and do all that you've been doing, Modi, then is EB-5 for them?
I would suggest to them that they think about it very seriously, because if they're looking for an easy panacea, EB-5 is not it. EB-5 is a great program. The results are great, but you have to work at it.
Well, Morty, let's explore that a little bit. So you've talked about, and it sounds like, honestly, it sounds like you're on board with EB-5 and you understand that the marketing component really is key to fund a successful EB-5 project. But you also mentioned earlier on in the show that, you know, you approached your partners about a year ago regarding EB-5 and they said, no, it's too complicated. What were some of the concerns, perhaps around the complications that your partners had about a year ago?
We never got into a specific discussion. I think they were concerned because EB-5 is its own little world. And you have to do things in a certain way to qualify under the rules and regulations. Maybe for me, having been educated as a lawyer, it was less of a concern. But for them, they were not used to that. And also, they have had meetings with people in the EB-5 business who, as I said earlier, there are people who promise the world and give the industry a bad reputation as a result.
Yeah, I could see that. Are there sources of traditional real estate funding that they feel more comfortable with? Do you think it's because of that, that EB-5 looks totally different, that it looks really complicated? Not to say that it's easy. It certainly is complicated. But do you think it's because it's so different from those traditional sources of real estate funding that most people...
I think that's part of it. But also what you need to understand, many developers don't really care very much how successful their project is because they make most of their money on the fees. I'm an owner developer, which means I build to own, not to sell. I do not sell real estate. I have property that I've owned for 30 years. So I don't make money from fees from investors. I make money if what I build is successful long term. And that's why using the other means of financing that are available are of less interest to me, because if you use those other avenues, you own less of the project and you can enjoy less of the appreciation long term.
It's very important to understand that, Mark, because some of the criticism which has been leveled against EB-5 and the big developers has been because the impression often is that most EB-5 money is just going to big developers. And many of these, the lobbyists and the legislators don't realize that it is helping the ordinary person also. And I've talked about it many times, about EB-5 being in projects which would not normally get funding but for EB-5.
Right.
And one thing also to remember, Mark, is that EB-5 money is cheap money or cheaper money, but it's slow. It takes time. And often that doesn't work with real estate if they have deadlines.
That's right. I think the overall cost of capital looks so low, it's attractive, but it is complex and, as you said, slow. Morty, let me ask you this. Why, with all the complications with EB-5, why are you even considering it?
Because EB-5 allows a developer to retain a larger portion of ownership of the project. And I build if I believe in something. I don't do it just to churn some fees for a 2-3 year period. So my children and the grandchildren I don't have yet can enjoy it. And EB-5 allows me to create a capital stack that results in my having a greater percentage of ownership as compared to if I went with other more conventional financing methods.
Well, that's it in a nutshell, Mark. It's an excellent. Thank you, Morty. I really appreciate you coming on.
Glad to be here.
well, Mona, we just talked to somebody who's considering EB5. So let's move forward and talk to somebody who just got into it.
And now for another guest that we have on the show is somebody who is also has a wonderful EB5 project, but this time they're not renting a regional center. They actually put up their own regional center. It's a brand new regional center, but he's not brand new to developing or putting up good projects. I'd like to welcome to the show Rob Donnelly. Hello, Rob.
Hey, Rob.
Hello. Thank you, Mona. Thank you, Mark. It's great being here. I appreciate it.
But Rob, thanks for joining us. I realize you've got a regional center. In fact, your regional center is somewhat new. So a lot of all the hurdles and everything to get that done and perhaps some of the pains and bruises are still fresh in your mind.
Yes, they are. It was quite the marathon. It's definitely a marathon, not a race. So, but it's nice to have it behind us. It's nice to have the first project underway and focused on getting this one funded and on to the next.
Love it.
Well, Mark, you can hear that both Rob and Modi have had issues starting things up, but they both have a lot of enthusiasm. And I'd just like to know a little bit about this enthusiasm. So, Rob, tell us a little bit about your project, first of all.
Sure. The project is a boutique hotel in Austin, Texas, where we're located. It's going to be operated by Auberge Resorts, which is a nationally and in many ways internationally known boutique hotel operator. And what is particularly interesting about this project, there are four family offices that are coming together from really all the cities in Texas to put this project together and leverage each of their expertise and history in the hotel industry to bring to fruition. And it will be one of the nicest hotels in Central Texas when it's complete.
It does sound like a very good project, and it sounds pretty sound. What caused you to go into use EB5? Because you have a lot of experience in putting projects together, Rob, but you haven't been in EB5 before, right?
Sure. I have not. I have not. This is the first. And a lot of this is just drawn from my experience on the private equity, private real estate side for many years. I was a principal of a fund for 10 years in Houston. I've been in Austin for 10 years doing a series of one-off transactions with family offices and other investors. And EB5 was brought to my attention about 3 years ago when I started this process. And specifically, it's a unique tool that fits a very special role in the capital structure and in the financing of real estate projects. As you know, we have all the traditional tools of bank finance and equity finance and even private mezzanine debt finance. It's a little bit more expensive. And EB5 fills a very specific niche on being a little more developer friendly, lower cost of capital to the project, which really enhances the equity returns. And so once I looked and I saw and learned more about the what the program was about from an economic standpoint, it certainly made a lot of sense to try and make use of that in some of the projects we were working on. But as we alluded to earlier in the conversation, there's a lot to this business that you don't see until you're in the middle of it. And it's been a very educational process over the last 3 years to get to this point.
So how easy did you think it was when you first started, Rob, in actually getting investors and actually getting actual capital into the project?
Well, I thought it would certainly be easier than it has been. And I think I was just drawing on, you know, my experience on raising capital domestically. I've even worked with some foreign direct investors before, which has just been much more smooth than this process. And I think a lot of it, and even having done due diligence on EB5 and really understanding what the process was going to be about before I started it, I think I was surprised at how slow things move, how much detail and how much additional work goes into putting together an EB5 package over and above all the other documents to go into a deal in terms of construction and other capital campaigns. So it certainly has been a larger undertaking. It can certainly be done. It's very doable. It's a little more expensive than originally had budgeted. So that's something that we have to plan for in the next project. And it really comes down to the quality of the team. I've had to go through a couple of different teams, both on the legal side and some of the professional services side, to get the right team that knows how to do these projects. They're very specialized, and you need to get specialized people that can do it with you.
But Rob, do you also think that, and be very frank with us, just it's just me, Mark, and
everyone else
listeners
in the world.
And a few thousand listeners.
But be very frank, do you feel that it's very difficult now as a new project coming in, no matter how good you are, to fight against the establishment, so to speak, you know, the larger, more well-known regional centers?
It is very difficult. It's not too difficult. It's not too difficult from the stance that we're going to abandon the project or not complete the mission, but it's much more difficult than I anticipated. The establishment has distribution in place. They have agent relationships in place. They have the economics in place. And in many cases, they have an exemplar project, or even better, an I-526 filing or response from USCIS, which makes it even easier to market their projects. And so we're having to fight that battle in terms of being a new regional center, unproven as a regional center, even though we have individual track records in real estate and private equity. Investors still want to see a regional center and a regional center team with a track record. So we're finding a lot of different fronts to get investors to commit.
Right. And one of the good things that you are doing is not just going into China where really the market is saturated, but looking at alternative markets.
Yes. Yes. And it gets expensive. You know, I think the key and something that's important for any regional center operator to keep in mind is that marketing is expensive. And when you talk about global marketing, it gets really expensive. And you try and maintain as much focus as you can and focus your marketing efforts, but you really do have to get out there pretty far to find these somewhat emerging markets.
Mark, as I mentioned earlier, you do still hear the enthusiasm in Rob's voice, which just shows that even though there are so many difficulties and it is an uphill battle, you know, once you start experiencing that EB-5 can work, it does spur you on.
I do hear that enthusiasm, but I also hear a lot of the pain that Rob has gone through, because, you know, he said that he has obviously experience being a developer. You know, he's put things up. He's also has experience, you know, raising capital, but domestically, and how that was different than raising capital with a foreign market. So there's that, you know, foreign capital market raise, as well as, you know, all of the additional documentation it goes to create an EB-5 regional center, and as well as the speed of the immigration services to get that done. When I say speed, I mean the opposite of that. But as well as like the fight against those incumbents, the regional centers that are already out there, they have those I-529s have already been filed and already been approved. Those establishments that already have agent relationships or distribution. It sounds like EB-5 can be a challenge for someone who is proven to be a good developer, but has yet to be a proven regional center. But so my question really is to both Rob and you, Mona, is this a challenge that can be overcome?
Well, the thing is that EB-5 has so many components. I mean, first of all, you're looking at all of the business and corporate experience required. There's a very, very small amount of immigration, and there's a large chunk of everything else. Other than a good developer, other than a good project, you have to know how to market. And marketing is an entire world in itself. Don't you agree, Rob?
It is. It absolutely is. And it's different marketing to an EB-5 investor than any other kind of investor on the planet, because they're making both an investment and an immigration decision. And they're making a big lifestyle decision in many cases. And so they are not just wrestling with the economics of the deal. They're not just looking at the return on investment. In this case, obviously, it's a very low return on investment. But they're looking at a lot of other factors that relate to them personally and emotionally. And because of that, they're going to take their time. They're going to work through every detail. They're going to want to pause and think about it and talk to their family members and then come back to you and continue the conversation. And so you have to be much more patient with EB-5 investors as an individual, because they are not in a hurry. Some every once in a while you find are in a hurry to get to the U.S. Many of them are not in a hurry to make a quick decision. They want to make the right decision.
Rob, do you find any difficulties in being in Austin, Texas, because it's not as well known as perhaps other parts, maybe Houston or of course, New York or L.A.?
Absolutely. And that we do. And I think anyone that is not in New York or California, maybe Florida and Seattle, you know, is going to feel that.
Yeah.
Just because there aren't as many transactions out in the market. They're not as educated on this market. They haven't had friends or families that have invested in Texas even. And so we do a lot of education on Texas and Austin and why this is an interesting market and how fast it's growing and how it's thriving. And it's a great risk return profile for any investor, EB-5 or other, but we do have to do a lot of education on that front.
Rob, I hear you that Austin is a very upcoming area, but can you answer a question which often our listeners do ask? With projects outside of the big cities, do the construction costs and other costs, are they much lower so that the actual profitability of the project is higher?
That's a good question.
They are lower, and I think the entire risk profile often changes, because it's not just the construction costs that are lower, but also less competition for that product type, and oftentimes less operating costs depending on what the project is, its hotel or other. So overall, I would say the risk profile can be better in a different region, still have to do your analysis to make sure it has the right demand factors. But oftentimes, as we face with this project, the opportunity is there will be nothing like it in Central Texas. There are other boutique hotels, but they are in downtown proper and very small lots. This is a 10-acre site. It'll have much more of a campus feel, much more of an urban oasis, if you will. And we just will not have any competition in that class of product. So that's an additional, really, you know, opportunity for risk management.
How do you get this information over to your investors? I mean, how do they really understand all of this?
You have to build it into the marketing. It's a challenge to communicate it. And that's something that, you know, the approach that we've taken to battle this, you know, front of not having the long track record and not having an exemplar project is to focus on key elements like risk management and go through the entire matrix of risk management. That's something I can leverage off of my private equity background and looking at both the investment goals and the immigration goals and go line by line on how do we de-risk this for investors? How do we minimize risk for investors? So as they're comparing this project to a project in Manhattan, we can get them over the goal line and realizing, wow, this is a unique project. It's fully capitalized. It's not dependent on EB-5 capital. It's mezzanine debt that's ahead of the equity. And the equity in this case is four family offices that have several billion in collective net worth. And it is ready for construction. And just go through that checklist of what, you know, how and where do projects go wrong, even in great markets. There are EB-5 projects that fail. So, yeah. You know, why did those fail and how do we make sure that we convince investors that we have addressed these concerns as best we can?
Rob, thank you so much for coming on. But before we let you go, let me ask you this. Do you have any regrets in using EB-5 for your project?
You know, I do not have any regrets in using EB-5 for the project. There were things I would have done differently, different teams I would have brought in sooner. We are closing investors and we're seeing the fruits of our labor over the last few years and the benefit from that to the project, and we'll continue to see that as we close this out. So no regrets in pursuing EB-5, definitely things I would have done differently, which we all would do with the benefit of hindsight, but no regrets. I think EB-5 is a valuable resource both for U.S. developers and for the families that we serve, and I look forward to many successful projects ahead.
Thank you for that. Mona, yeah. A strong team. Have we heard that before? I love it. Not to promote anything else that we talk about on the show, or perhaps even the people on the show.
well, Mark, you have to say though, the experience really does matter in this industry, and a mistake can cost a project, and it can cost an investor millions, a lot of money.
Well, it sounds like Rob has caught it. Maybe it's cost some money, but it hasn't cost the project yet. So, Rob, yeah. I'm glad you've identified and corrected that as quickly.
I appreciate it. And I really appreciate being on the show. You guys do great work.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rob, for coming on.
Thank you.
Thank you for being with us today on EB-5 Investment Voice. The topics presented in this podcast is informational in nature and is not to be taken as specific legal advice. If you have questions on the topics presented in this episode or other investment immigration needs, please contact Mona Shaw & Associates. Mona and her attorney staff can be reached at mshawlaw.com. That's mshahlaw.com. Make sure you don't miss our next episode focusing on a different aspect of the EB-5 program by subscribing to the podcast. While you're at it, leave us a rating on iTunes. If you really found this episode valuable, share it with someone else that could benefit from this information. Until then, I'll see you on the next episode of EB-5 Investment Voice.